Now that Tu B'Av is upon us, I wanted to do the fourth installment of Lessons from a Decade of Dating. We are up to Lesson 16, which is that dating is a component of Avodas Hashem. It's something that I think you'll have a polar reaction to. Either you'll think this is so obvious, or you'll think this is a big chiddush. And I think oftentimes a person decompartmentalizes things that they feel are religious in nature and things that are not, right? So for myself, just to give a personal example, in the summer there are times where I'm focusing on religiosity. I'm focusing on learning and giving shirim or preparing for a shir, working on midos. And then there are times where I just want to relax and I might play golf, I might play guitar, I might watch something on Netflix. Right? That happens. And you have these two categories. You have the religious category, and you have the non-religious category. And I think oftentimes, when it comes to dating, people unfortunately put dating in the non-religious activities. A person might think, you know, I'm gonna daven, maybe I'll learn a little bit, I'll do some chesed. And then on the other side is, well, you know, watching Friends, watching some other Netflix stuff, and then I'm going on a date, right? Sometimes we categorize dating as the other. And I remember learning and hearing this from Rav Chaim Marcus over a decade ago, where he said that's so important to realize that dating is a component of Avodas Hashem. If you think about why you're doing it, why are you dating? Why do you want to get married? Of course, it's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have a Jewish family, to have continuity for the Jewish people to continue the Mesorah, and to impart these lessons to our children, who we, Emir Tashem, all want to have. And that's why we're dating. That's why we're doing this. So even though it's true, you might be going to play ping pong, probably not so much now, but whatever you might be doing on your Zoom date or in person, sitting 6 feet apart, talking in the park, wherever you might be doing, you might think, this isn't religious. This is not a religious activity. But you'd be mistaken. Because it's important to think about why you're doing it and building that relationship, building the foundational building blocks of the relationship to get married, to have all those things that we just discussed, are certainly very noble religious acts. There's a famous letter, I apologize if you know this, but there's a famous letter from Rav Huttner, in Tzadi Dalid, where there's a person who wrote to him about how he felt like he was living two lives. He felt like he was living a religious life and a secular life, because he had to go out to work, he was successful in work, maybe he was even enjoying work. And then he had his religious life. And Rav Huttner wrote back to him, and he said, if you have a person who has a house with a family, let's say, in a rural life, a rural community, and then that person, for a full week out of the month, rents an apartment or goes to a hotel room for a week and goes and does crazy stuff, that person is living two lives. He has one life with his family and one life elsewhere, away from his family. And he said, that would be very problematic, of course. But if you have a person who, in one house, has two different rooms, or multiple rooms, of course, that person doesn't have a double life. That person has a broad life. And having different components and different facets is not a bad thing. It's not where this person thought that, you know, if I'm doing anything that's seems slightly away from a religious life, that means I'm not religious and it's in a separate category. But even sometimes, and certainly like dating, like I said, if you're just watching a movie, playing ping pong, whatever it may be, having ice cream, So it might feel as if you're not doing anything religious, but really saying that's a broad life. It's not a double life. That's a broad life. Lesson number 17, don't look over your shoulder. This lesson is so important, and it's something that plagues, unfortunately, a lot of people. It plagues every single person in different avenues of their lives. Even though I'm married right now, definitely there's something that affects me. So when it comes to dating, and I remember this, and I'm sure you are able to, this is able to resonate with you right now, that you will always, always, always find someone who you think has it better than you. And there are different examples of ways of what that could mean. One thing it could mean is that there's someone, a friend of yours, or someone, an acquaintance who married the first person they dated, or only dated two or three people, and then boom, they got married. I remember when I started dating like 20 and 21, whatever it was, and I remember after like a year or two of dating, finding out that someone who had just started, when I was like 2 years in or 3 years in, that someone who just started, they got married to the first girl. And I remember a certain level of jealousy. And it's certainly, it's normal, it's a normal emotion to feel. That you're here, you're stuck, and it also makes it frustrating when you find out that information when you're not in a relationship, of course. You're like, I'm at ground zero right now. I'm at square, the first rung right now. And this person just started dating and is getting married. It's crazy. I have a few friends who that happened to. Or basically the exact scenario, actually, where I was like dating for 3 years and then they started dating and married the first person. I'm happy for them. Baruch Hashem, the jealousy is very much worn off. The next thing is that it's not necessarily someone who gets married right away, but someone who gets set up a lot more than you. And it's also very frustrating. Where here you feel like, I'm a good person also. I'm a good boy or a good girl. And how come that person gets set up so much more than me? And then it might be another example, someone who gets set up with the type of people that you'd want to be set up with. Could be you're getting set up as much as them. You know, but they're getting red, people who I want to date. And I'm not getting those opportunities that they have. And there are plenty, plenty of other examples we could come up with now. But it's a very, very difficult thing, especially when someone's older, of course, when many of their friends could already be married, and just that feeling of loneliness and feeling of, oh my God, like, everyone else is married but me, right? That feeling, that thought. And it's always dangerous to constantly look at the external success that it seems others have achieved. To look at someone else and look at their lives and say, wow, they made it. They have what I want. And it makes a person negative, pessimistic, and really just sad. Just to look at the success of others around them. To use a non-dating example, so I'm much less into music right now, into trying to do music professionally. But there was a time where I was very into it, and I've spent tens of thousands of dollars making albums and buying equipment, and thank God, like, I've had many kumzitzes that I've played. But I remember being very jealous of those bigger musicians who just, A, got many, many, many more gigs than I did, and B, were able to charge a lot more money for one gig than I was able to. And obviously, rationally, it makes sense, and I understood why they got more, and understood why they were able to charge more, but I was very jealous. And I had the following thought, though. I realized that that person, or those people who I was jealous of, I could almost guarantee that they're also jealous of the people above them, because in the davar sof, right, if you have someone in a company who's making $2 million a year, and you think, oh my God, like, they've made it, like, right? That's like an exorbitant amount of money. And it could be in their minds, they're thinking, you know what? But the CEO is making $50 million a year, right? It continues. And it's such a negative mentality to always be looking at the person who has it, what it seems, better than us. It does not mean that it is better than us. It is not necessarily so advantageous to marry the first person you date. It doesn't mean that they're the wrong person for you, but there are a lot of issues and struggles that could happen because you got married so young. There are a lot of things. There are pros and cons for every situation in life. And the Torah lesson for this is we just read in this past week's parsha, the Aseret HaDibros, and one of the Aseret HaDibros is Lo Sachmod. The Torah says, Lo Sachmod Beis Re'echa, Lo Sachmod Eishes Re'echa, V'yado V'amaso V'shuro V'chamaro V'chol Sher Re'echa. Basically, don't be jealous of anything else someone has. And the Ibn Ezra famously discusses how it's a very, very difficult thing for a person to achieve. How could we even be commanded to control our emotions to such an extent that we can't be jealous? How could a person not be jealous of someone? I just took a test. I got an 80. That person got an 100. How could I not be jealous of that? I just bought a Ford Taurus. That person just bought a Lamborghini. I can't be jealous. How could I control that? And so the Ibn Ezra says that, I'm going to explain it with the mashal. He says, if you have a simple person, say a person who's working in the fields, and imagine, he doesn't go into these details, but I'll just paint the picture a little more. Imagine if he hears a big parade going on in the street. This person who's working in the field, who's harvesting his crop, he runs over to the field and he sees that the princess is coming by. And she's in her carriage, and there's a whole escort in front of her, and all the people from the town are there on the side cheering her on. And so he runs over and he sees her, and he's a single guy, around the same age as this princess. And I could tell you, even though it says, you know what? It does not occur to him, you know what? I really want to marry her. I deserve to marry this woman. It's not a thought that crosses his mind, because he knows that she's way out of his league. He knows that they're just in different categories. It's not even necessarily she's better, he's worse, but it's just not shayach at all. It would never cross his mind. Ibn Ezra says the same thing is true when it comes to what we have. Everything we have is from Hashem. And if I realize that exactly what I have, exactly what my lot is given to me and carved out specifically for me from Hashem, then I won't look over my shoulder. I won't look to my left or to my right to see what you have, to what might appear better or might appear worse. Because it just doesn't matter. Because exactly what I have is exactly what I need from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lesson number 18 is, how important is family? There are a lot of different opinions regarding this and a lot of nuances. So I'm going to try to flush it out. It's not necessarily where I will necessarily pick a side. But I'll explain. I'll go through. So there are certainly a lot of different opinions regarding the importance of how someone should view the family that they could be marrying into. And it's obvious that everyone wants to marry into the perfect family, although there's probably no such thing as a perfect family. Everyone wants the family, the parents of the person you're dating, to be the same religious level as you, and of the person you're dating, and of their child. And everyone wants their future in-laws to be blemish-free, to have no pagam, not have a pagam on them. But there are three different things that I thought of that could go wrong that could not be in line with what you would have wanted. One, midos, could be that they're not necessarily the nicest people, and you were hoping you'd get someone who you could have really great conversations with, and you know, they're a little cold, they're not so interesting, and you kind of are a little frustrated about that, about the midos department. Next is the religious background, where you're more to the right and they're more to the left, or a lot more to the left, or you're a little more to the left and they're a lot more to the right. They're a little more yeshivish than you, and it could be certain tension there. And then the last one is a potential colored history, maybe to the extent of imprisonment for a white-collar crime or something, but certain pagam within the family's history. And all those things are unsettling, of course, whether it's midos, different religious level, colored history. And there's certain people in certain circles that spend just as much, if not more time, looking into the family than looking into the boy or girl that they're going to date. Right? They spend hours and hours trying to find out everything about the family. And there's merit to that, of course. And on the opposite side, there are certain people who only focus on the person they're looking into and don't pay any attention to the family. My personal experience, I certainly was more towards focusing on the girl I was dating and a lot less into the family, but I certainly cared about it as well. I'd say I'm somewhat in between these two, but a little closer to not caring as much about family. I don't believe ever, out of the maybe 100 girls or so I looked into, I don't believe I ever asked a question about the family. I don't think so. And it's not necessarily, it doesn't mean you can't. Certainly, like I said, there is merit to it. There's some of this is a little bit more about what matters to you. And when it came to meeting the parents of a girl I was dating, whether it was for a dinner or for a Shabbos, so there are times I was very happy with the family, and there are times I was less happy with the family. But in all those situations, it never once contributed to me wanting to date or not date the girl I was dating because of that. But unfortunately, there are plenty of situations where people break engagements. I know of someone who got divorced because of his in-laws. And I don't know, I certainly do not know the whole story. I know next to nothing of the story, but that's the rumor that I heard. And it can have a lot of detrimental result because of it. But obviously, 98% of the time is going to be about the person who you're going to be dating and marrying. And that's 100%, I think, l'kuli amlo pligi, that should be the ikar. How much to focus on the tafel is subjective. You certainly want someone nice, certainly want someone who's religious, but you're not going to get everything. Hopefully you will. Likely won't all happen. But to think about for yourself, or to speak to a therapist or Rebbe, someone who's married who you could speak to about that, if there's something that you are uncertain about, something that is a little off in your mind. And when it comes to a Torah lesson for this, so there are certainly times where we do focus on family. Right? Avraham made sure to instruct Eliezer to go and find someone for Yitzchak who was from a specific family. Go to that place, go to that town, go to that family. Right? And the Gemara in Tanis on Daf Kaf Vav Amabez, which discuss what's gonna, I believe, Tubav tomorrow. that says, "Ubinos Yerushalayim yotzos v'cholos bekramim, my hayu omros." So they go out, they're wearing these white dresses, right? They look very fancy, right? Dressed up. And they say, "My hayu omros," what they say, "Bachor, hey, bachelor, sana inecha re mata borelcha." Let's go. Open your eyes. Look around. Al titein einecha benoi, tein einecha b'mishpacha. Don't look at the beauty, but look at the family. Look at my family. And the Gemara it says to certainly a person should look at the family. In Shmos, in Parshas Vayera, Perek Vav, Pasuk Kaf Gimel, it says, "Vaykach Aaron is Elisheva bas Aminadav, achos Nachshon lolisha." So Aaron, he married Elisheva, who's the daughter of Aminadav, who's the sister of Nachshon. Now, the Torah doesn't waste words. The Torah doesn't usually give a family tree to when someone gets married. So what's going on over here? So Rashi says, why does it say Achos Nachshon? She's a sister of Nachshon. Mikan lamanu hanose isha tzarach livdok ba'achaha. When someone's marrying a girl, make sure to look at her brother. See how her brother is. So it is important to look at family. Certainly a very valuable trait. I do think, and I will say that sometimes people look at family too much. Maybe there is hyper-focus on family sometimes. I think a person should, like I said, a person should consult a rav, consult a therapist, consult a mentor to see what's appropriate, what's inappropriate regarding this matter. Number 19, taking the leap. There comes a point for everyone where they will have to take a leap. Every single person, when you're dating, you hope and you honestly expect it to be where you grow in love with the person, you become in love, and you have such a strong desire to marry them that it's so clear and obvious to you that there's nothing to talk about, nothing to think about. But, I don't say unfortunately, but the reality is that it often requires a leap. It often requires a little bit of a push from yourself, an inner push, to take that leap. And I'm not discussing here when it comes to, let's say, red flags that we've discussed in a previous year. But everything is good. And things are good, not just on paper, things in the relationship are good. But in your mind is the following thought. Can I do better? Is he really right for me? Is she really right for me? Is this really the person I'm supposed to marry? In our minds, 100% we have conjured up for years, however long you've been dating, you've conjured up the image of the person you expect to marry. And then here's the person in front of you who you might marry, and it's just not what you had in mind. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing, but it's just not what you had in mind. And even though the relationship's going well, even though there's certain flexibility you have to give, things are really good. And I think this is working, but it could require a little bit of a push. And it's important to be self-aware, to realize this, to find and always try to be able to pinpoint whether, if you are hesitant, to see if the hesitancy is because something is wrong in the relationship, which it could be, or to see if the hesitancy is because, you know, this is scary, right? I was very comfortable being single, right? I was single for many, many years, living on my own, living in Washington Heights. I could eat what I want for dinner. I could also eat what I want for dinner right now, but you'll see where I'm going. I could eat what I want for dinner. I could do what I want at night. I could go out. I could hang out with friends. I could just have my own schedule. Always. I don't have to worry about finances for a family, for someone else. I don't have to worry about sacrificing and driving here or driving there. And life sometimes is more simpler. Certainly could be. And sometimes we're hesitant because of that, because it's, we know that when we get married, it's a drastic change to the lives we've been living up until that point. And it's very normal to be apprehensive and to really be scared. It's normal. But for most of us, it will require a little bit of that leap. And once you make that leap, and if you, assuming, like I said, assuming you know that everything is good in a relationship, it's just you need that leap, then you really will feel alleviated, and you're going to feel great. Once, Meirat Hashem, once you get engaged, and certainly once you get married, when things become real, and you're like, I did it. And yeah, this is not as scary as I thought. And when it came to the greatest salvation in world history, which is Kriyas Yam Suf, where Hashem saved the Jewish people, not to mention how Chazal equates and uses the analogy of Kriyat Yam Suf to finding a zivug, to finding one's shidduch. So when it came to Kriyas Yam Suf, so it was not as easy, the splitting of the sea was not as simple as it appears in the movies. And the Mechilta and Bishal says, Rabbi Huda Omer, Beloshon Acher, Ve'avo b'nei Yisrael b'soch hayam. B'nei Yisrael came to the sea. Kevan sh'amdu shvatim al yam, ze Omer, Ein ani yor t'chil al yam. The first tribe said, the second tribe said, like, we're not going first. We're not jumping in. It's a raging sea. So mitoch shahayu omdin, v'notlin etza. And as they were just standing there, and they're asking advice, Moshe, what do we do? What do we do? Kavat Nachshon ben Aminadav v'nafal hayam. Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped in. And that's when the sea split. In order for the salvation to happen, it required the leap. It required Nachshon to just jump in. And everyone was scared. This was their Yeshua, but everyone was scared to take that leap. Lesson number 20 is going off script. People often assume that there's a, and whether you assume there is, or you, in your mind, you just make up a certain rhythm to how things should be. Whether the rhythm is one date per week, two dates per week, always a phone call for only 20 minutes before the first date, and you could only text if you're outside, or you could text after date number two, but you don't want to text so long, you don't want to text after a certain hour. And people sometimes are rigid in these calculations, and how often to date, and how often to talk, and how long to talk for, right? And sometimes it's important to go off script. Sometimes it's important, and it's very beneficial to be spontaneous, to do something that you might not characteristically do. To decide, you know what? I only go out once, or I go out twice a week, but I really want to see her, or I really want to see him. Let me just text them if they want to go out tonight. You know, it's not the craziest thing in the world. And the person will appreciate that. And it's something that oftentimes those moments actually help build the relationship. Those moments of spontaneity, those moments where you realize I'm not boxed in, I'm not going to be as rigid and as calculated as I once was. Let me just go with it. Let me talk or text when I want to. And let's go out when we want to. Obviously, there are times where it's unhealthy, certainly in terms of the content, but even just the amount of the duration to text for, the duration to talk for, of course, they're unhealthy amounts of time that a person could do that for. To date five times a week is clearly not the best piece of advice. But unfortunately, people are sometimes more too rigid in the other way. And it is important to be yourself. Just be natural. And take things as they come. And when it comes to the Torah lesson for this, if you listen, or if you read, say, Halacha Sefer, so you'll have someone who puts out a 300-page book on a certain halachic topic. And in it, they write in the introduction, you should just know, I'm not paskening for you. This is not a psak. Like, what do you mean this isn't a psak? You just wrote 300 pages of kashrus. I'm learning, there's a kashrus book I enjoy. It's a Q&A, Kashrus in the Kitchen, I think it's called. And it's like that. It's like 300 pages. Like, Shelen Shuvot. And he writes, don't think this is a psak for you, basically, in the introduction. Like, don't take this, these answers. And why did they say that? How come they say this isn't a psak? And we think, what do you mean? This is me learning it so I could know what to do. This is my psak. But, so, some of it might come from a certain area of Yira, of the Yira to Paskin Ashayla. But more often than not, it actually comes from the fact that every circumstance is different. And there's so many nuances that could change from one circumstance to another that when they put out a halachic sefer, and here's the specific question, or here's the specific answer, or here's the fact about the halacha of basar b'chalav, your situation might be different, and you might not realize it. So don't paskin, not because what I'm saying is wrong, per se, or might be wrong, that I don't want to paskin. But it's, I know I'm right, but your situation is not necessarily like this. And every situation is unique, and every situation is different. And that's why you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, as they say. And over here, too, every situation is different. Don't necessarily be rigid and say, I'm only dating X amount of times per week, and X amount of phone calls, X amount of texts, and that's it, and that's where I am, loss of love, until I marry the person who I'm meant to marry. Be spontaneous. Realize every person is unique, every person is different. And Bezer Hashem, for those of you who are single, Bezer Hashem, this should be the time when you're able to to marry the person who you're meant to marry. And obviously right now, and just to conclude, right now is not a simple time in terms of dating. A lot of you are probably dating on Zoom, on Skype. It's not a simple thing. But of course, a lot of these applications are still relevant, and you are still able to grow in a relationship, as much more challenging and difficult as it makes it. It still is, Baruch Hashem, a way of dating that we still have. And it's something that you are able to really understand the person in a, certainly in a limited sense, much more limited sense, able to really know someone. And hopefully these challenges that we're going through should all end. Just go back to being able to date in person normally very soon, Bezer Hashem. And everyone should be Matzliach.